This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Jed Pearl, is an art critic in the art capital of the world, New York. And as Pearl has observed, New York is the center for all aspects of art, the making of it, as well as the promotion and buying and selling of it. And that makes for a situation both exhilarating and oppressive. In his museum and gallery reviews, Pearl writes about his personal response to the art, while also getting at the larger issues in contemporary art, and the social, political, and economic pressures under which art is made and shown. Pearl writes for the New Criterion, the New Republic, and Vogue. His reviews are collected in his new book, Gallery Going. Pearl says the time has come to stop looking to the museums for guidance on contemporary art.
Museums have become institutions that have very close ties with the corporations and are very concerned with attendance figures, with building programs, with blockbuster shows. And the museums have their own agenda now, which is not necessarily the agenda of art. Contemporary art goes along at its own pace, at its own rhythm. Contemporary artists develop slowly. Artists may not do anything exciting for the first 10 or 20 years of their careers, and then just burst out with something incredibly exciting. And the real rhythm of artists who are working day by day in their studio, that is not a rhythm that our increasingly institutionalized museums can tie into or connect with. So you get museums that are constantly looking for the next trend, the next blockbuster, the next innovation. They need one next fall. They need one in 6 months. And they tend to be out of sync with what is really going on in the art scene.
This bottom line that you're describing, where museums have to do this kind of thing to bring in a lot of people to balance the books, do you think that that's about survival? Because museums, like so many art institutions, are really struggling for money now.
Museums are struggling for money. Museums have also gotten very tied into the corporate mentality of you must grow or you die. And what has happened is that museums are afraid to say, we're just going to stay the way we are. And museum going becomes a crazy experience. You go to the National Gallery in Washington, D.C., you go to the East Wing to the blockbuster show, you can't get near the paintings. And yet you walk a few steps over to the West Wing, to the permanent collection, and you're alone. You can spend an afternoon looking at masterpieces by, you know, Da Vinci, Rembrandt, in the most marvelous conditions. And yet people are pushed and pumped into these blockbuster situations.
You know what you get into when you're discussing, you know, blockbuster shows and crowds that turn up for it and so on? You can get into the elitist versus populist argument. You know, you can make the argument that these blockbuster shows end up finally being more democratic than the other shows because they do draw the kind of people who wouldn't ordinarily go to a museum, and that's a good thing.
Well, you ask people who have come out of the Degas show or the Gauguin show in Chicago or New York or Washington, okay, how they felt, and most of them say, thank God I got through it, and now let's go have lunch. Populist and elitist are very funny terms. And sometimes it seems that the old-fashioned elitist museums, which never charged admission, by the way, okay, and just were open and they said, if you're inclined, come. Sometimes those places, when you look back, look a heck of a lot more populist than the new supposedly populist museums. The Metropolitan Museum of Art is very expensive to get into today. A family going on a weekend, you know, mom and dad and the kids, can spend, you know, $20 getting in the front door. 25 years ago, the Metropolitan Museum of Art did not charge admission. What's populist? What's elitist? Museums, I think, should be a bit of a haven, okay, a backwater. They should be there for everybody as libraries should be. But it should also be a free place, a peaceful place where people can make their own connections.
You live and work in New York, so you cover not only museum shows, but you're in the galleries all the time. What's the difference between the function that the museums serve in the art world and the function that galleries serve in the art world?
Well, the gallery world is a real kind of harried, pressured environment in which a lot of things happen and don't happen, and people are always kind of looking in five directions at once.
In writing about galleries, you say that the gallery scene is crowded with frauds, clones, and mediocrities. Sounds pretty discouraging.
Some days it is discouraging. You go to a lot of galleries and you don't see anything exciting. But the follow-up, I think, to that line in the book was I talked about the surprise, the exhilaration when you do find something that you react to. And it's especially exhilarating when it's by an artist you've never heard of before, or somebody whose work you've known but you've never clicked with before. And for those of us who go to the galleries all the time, there's this excitement of reacting to things as they're happening, and reacting to artists who are reacting to our time. And when it clicks, there's nothing like it.
One of the art stories of the 80s was about how art had become a really big investment,
yeah,
and that was really making the careers of some, yeah, artists who were really becoming quite wealthy. And the it seems now that the bottom has dropped out of,
yeah,
the art market. What are your impressions of that? I mean, has the bottom dropped out, and how is that affecting the art scene?
The bottom has and hasn't dropped out, I would say. Prices are going down, and one hears that artists of the Sally Schnabel ilk, you know, whose prices really were pushed very high up, are being left a bit sort of floating up there. They can't get the prices, and they're a little bit stuck. But the vast sort of mechanisms of publicity and support that grow up around a scene like this, they're still in place. They're retrenching a little bit, but they're still in place. In a way, the real story of art remains in the early 90s what it was in the 80s, that we have a lot of artists who are working along, who are incredibly dedicated. You know, you hear about the glitz, the, you know, the million-dollar lofts. That's such a small segment of this thing. I mean, really, art is a career that involves incredible dedication and incredible courage, because the rewards, even if you get fairly well known, are just not that great. And really, we go on in the early 90s, the stuff that it really interests me, we go on as we went on in the 80s, with artists working, trying to get their work out, hoping that people will respond, developing. And I think for the more serious and the more engaging of the people who became at least semi-art stars in the 80s, that's true too. The real work gets done despite it all.
Art critic Jed Pearl is my guest, and his pieces are collected in a new book called Gallery Going. Well, censorship and funding are among the most controversial issues in the art world now. Maybe you can share with us what your take was of the controversy over the Robert Mapplethorpe art and the Robert Mapplethorpe censorship.
Well, let me kind of take a broad look at that thing, because I think we've all heard a lot about the specifics of it. I think that sometimes we tend to judge art and society by identical sets of standards. I think sometimes we tend to think about what goes on in works of art and what goes on in society in exactly the same way. And I think when we're doing that, we're making a mistake. And I think it's a mistake that's made both on the left and on the right.
Give us an example of what you mean.
A male nude, okay, that's an erotic male nude. You hear the right wing saying, this is terrible, this can't be permitted. You hear the left wing saying, this is very, very important to show, okay, because this is something that has not been shown in art in public recently, okay. In a way, both the left and the right are saying something similar. They're saying, the message is, how does this relate to society? What does this say about the culture? How does it fit into the culture?
Looking at it purely as message.
Right. And my feeling is that one of the marvelous things about art is that it's a kind of free parallel universe. Okay, it's a place where we can react and respond to what's going on in all kinds of ways that are crazy, that would be inappropriate on the street, okay? And on questions of censorship, I sometimes find myself saying, I am absolutely against censorship. If the NEA peer review panel has voted money for a Mapplethorpe show or a Mike Kelly show at the ICA in Boston, we give the money. That peer panel says this is good, and therefore it should be shown. On the other hand, at the same time, I feel perfectly free to say, as works of art, these particular things happen not to satisfy me, okay?
But it's not because you're shocked at the subject
exactly,
matter.
Exactly. And I think, you know, one of the things that has troubled me in the last year is that I think liberals, and I think of myself as a liberal, have kind of felt so caught in the middle that they've been afraid to say what they think.
Do you think that one of the after effects of the right wing's attack on controversial art is that people are becoming more interested in art with a controversial message at the expense of art that isn't politically relevant?
I think that's definitely true. A landscape painter is probably going to have a harder time getting an NEA grant today than somebody with controversial subject matter. That's not to say that the work with controversial subject matter doesn't deserve the grant. Subject matter is a real issue in art, and people do react to it, okay? And that's as it should be. And, you know, when these issues get so overheated and you have people sort of at extremes lobbing things against one another, you know, one of the tragedies is that the kind of complex experience that art, looking at art, is, just gets lost. You know, that's what we're really in this thing for those complex experiences that enlarge our sense of what's going on right now.
Does anything shock you anymore? And how do you weight that in terms of the value of the art if it does shock you?
Well, look, what I look for when I go to the galleries is a feeling in the gut. It's a funny kind of feeling. It's a feeling that the art is pulling you toward it. I can't explain it better than that. But so, you know, shock can be a part of that pull. Something is weird, disturbing, and that becomes part of the pull. But, you know, a lot of things that are shocking, new subject matter, of course you're pulled in for a minute, but then I find that quickly I'm leaving the gallery. I'm not pulled back. On the other hand, there are other shows that on the surface don't look that exciting or shocking. But, you know, I leave the gallery, I go to the elevator, and then I find myself going back. I just want to take a little bit more in.
If you're just joining us, my guest is art critic Jed Pearl, and he writes for The New Criterion, for The New Republic, and for Vogue, and a collection of his pieces from the mid to late 80s is in the new book, Gallery Going. We'll take a short break, then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is art critic Jed Pearl, and he has a collection of pieces called Gallery Going. Now, Jed Pearl, you write for The New Criterion, which is an art journal. You also write for Vogue and for The New Republic. Aside from The New Criterion, you're really not writing for the art magazines.
No.
Is that a conscious decision?
I used to write for the art magazines. It happens that I have found that I have maximum freedom writing in different kinds of places. No, it's not a conscious decision, and I think there are good things that appear in the art magazines, and the art magazines give a lot of exposure to a lot of artists who really need it. But I also do find it exciting to try to get a message about the art scene out beyond the artists. It's always wonderful when somebody who's into something else says, you know, they read you and they responded. They may not have even known precisely or specifically the artist you were talking about, but they got a sense of what you were getting at, and they felt an affinity for that.
I wonder if you think the art magazines often use the language of specialists to discuss art, and if that's not a language you're interested in using.
More and more, the art magazines do use a very specialized and increasingly academic language, that language of sort of academic theory, post-structuralism, deconstruction. You get that a lot now in the art magazines. What you get less and less of in the art magazines is direct observation, straight description of things. And it's very unfortunate, and it turns people off. One of the things that I really think we need desperately in the art world is more people who, if they're in New York or San Francisco or LA, say, all right, I'm going to take this afternoon and I'm going to go to galleries. Galleries are wonderful. They're free entertainment. And you can just spend an afternoon and go. You go to 15 or 20 places. Don't be afraid of not liking things. Have your reactions. And, you know, one hopes when one writes that one will persuade a few people to do that and expand the audience.
Why do you think that so much art criticism is written in that kind of dry, difficult to penetrate, post-structuralist kind of language that is usually, I might add, often also lacking in wit and irony and fun, you know?
I think, you know, one thing that terrifies people about art is the fact that it is a personal reaction that we're dealing with. I think the jargon is often a way of denying the subjectivity of this. We live in a world that values precision, that values technology. We all use technology all the time. And I think we're both attracted and afraid of the subjective, of the ephemeral, of the impression, of the impressionistic. And I think a lot of the art writers are afraid to say, I did respond, I didn't respond. They want to give you some theory about it.
I know that a lot of people feel this way, and I know I sometimes feel this way too, that when you go to a gallery, this is what I experience sometimes. I go to a gallery, and especially if I'm looking particularly schlumpy that day, I feel like I walk in and think, she's not going to buy anything. Maybe we should ignore her. And you almost feel like a little out of place sometimes.
I would say two things about that. One thing that good dealers try to do is let you move through the place freely. And what many people may perceive as an unfriendliness is often a willingness to let you come in and go out at will. And the other thing I can tell you is there is nothing that makes an artist who's having a show happier than going in to look at the guest book. And when you go into a gallery, by all means, sign the guest book. There is nothing that makes an artist happier than seeing a few names in the guest book of people they don't know. Okay? And what makes artists happy makes dealers happy. Okay? You know, an artist walks into their show, and it can be the most elegant artist on earth who has great reviews. An artist walks into his show or her show, and there are a couple of, you know, students in, you know, dirty jeans sitting on the floor of the gallery. That artist's day has been made, because what it says is the public has come. And I really mean it. I know people are nervous about going to galleries, but people should get over it. And I might add, in New York and in other cities, all these gallery communities have gallery guides of one kind or another. Most galleries give them out free. You walk into one gallery, you get a list, they have maps in them. Take an afternoon, go, see what there is. You don't have to stay in every show for 10 or 15 or 20 minutes. If you don't like it, walk out and go to the next one. Believe me, dealers are happy that people come in.
Jed, let me ask you, when you're in a museum show, if you're with somebody, do you like to talk about the art as you're walking through the show, or are you self-conscious about that?
Self-conscious in relation to who? To the people?
No, about just like talking out loud about the art, knowing that, well, you know, in part because there's this kind of silence.
Oh, no, I think it's people, artists always talk about things in museums when they're there. And in fact, my wife and I are always complaining because whenever our son goes with his school, our son who's 8 goes to his school to a museum, they're always told to be quiet. And, I mean, this is absurd. I mean, you go and you want to talk. I mean, the great thing is when you're with somebody and, you know, somebody's on those rare occasions when there is a bench in front of a painting you want to look at, which is so marvelous, you actually sit down and you talk. And, you know, sometimes you'll be talking about other things and then you come back to the painting. And some of my greatest experiences with paintings have just been sitting on a bench in a museum with a friend. And, you know, we're kind of looking at it and not looking at it. And it changes the way you feel about the thing. That's part of what's terrible about blockbusters. I've been in blockbusters where they told you couldn't walk backwards, okay? And as you couldn't go back to the previous gallery to see a painting. Keep moving. I have heard that said at blockbuster shows. It's too crowded here. Keep moving. I mean, this is not what looking at art is about. If it's bad at the blockbuster, leave, go to the permanent collection, sit down in front of a painting and have yourself an experience. Just because that particular painting isn't being written about in Newsweek that week doesn't mean it's not worth looking at.
Well, Jed Pearl, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Well, thank you very much.
Jed Pearl is an art critic. He writes for The New Centurion, for Vogue, The New Republic, and he has a new collection of pieces called Gallery Going, Four Seasons in the Art World. This is Fresh Air.